What's up, everyone, and welcome to NXS Cast, a show where we talk about all things gaming NXS. We're back with episode 33, and I'm sure you've already noticed we're down a member. But I want to let you know that our beloved co-host Dash is currently enjoying a well-deserved vacation with the love of his life. And, you know, we're left to be in charge here, so we can do whatever we want going forward. Yeah. No, I'm just kidding. But
No, we are our own bosses this episode. But no, we will not be tempted by a David Burdett. Mm-hmm. We will stay on track for the show. Burdett. We must.
There will always be a David Burdett to distract us, but not today. So that being said, we love him, we miss him, but we hope that he's enjoying many sunrises and sunsets with the love of his life in the mountains of Hawaii.
We're talking about Dash, by the way. But we also miss David Burdett.
We do. And hopefully he's enjoying many sunsets and sunrises as well. But right now, he's not the important one. We're talking about Dash.
He's the forgotten one.
As always, I'm joined by the Souls-like stud, the Hostwire who plays Ghostwire, Elden Ringinist Splinginist, Jeremy Rain. How you doing, Jeremy?
Oh, my goodness. Anyways. Nat, good morning. You know, we've been kind of a little bit off in our you know, kind of like recording times. I mean, you know, for this week we had we did do a test kind of like network Twitch stream. We're calling it our network test. We're gonna do several of those just to until we kind of get the hang of doing things. But I think the idea is we're gonna stream a little bit more. So hopefully, you know, when you guys have the time that you'll join us on said stream. But that is like NXS after dark, and then now we're doing NXS in the morning. Good morning to everybody. Time. And whenever you're listening, good afternoon and good evening.
Yeah, I definitely second the fact that I've had a lot of fun doing the network tests, and for the one or two people who have joined in on those, hopefully you have as well. So I look forward to doing more of those, and we look forward to doing more of those, whether it's independent or as a team. So
it's only going to get better from our first network test, which actually, coincidentally enough, is not in our Twitch because we didn't know how to store previous broadcasts. And it's probably a good thing because we didn't know we were muted for like the,
first hour.
Yeah. So.
And that was probably when all of our most solid jokes were coming out.
Yeah. You know? And then we ran out of steam.
So anyway, with that being said, let's talk about what we've been playing. Jeremy, why don't we start with you? What have you been playing lately?
Yeah, so with the release of Returnal Ascension, I went back into that game. And sadly, you know, well, I don't know if it is a sad thing, but that made me essentially put Elden Ring back on the back burner. But I am looking to make progress on that game. Yes. It's time to go back into that game. But yeah, so more on Returnal Ascension. it is just kind of like a clash to kind of go back.
It's not like riding a bike.
No, it is. All right. So, you know, it's not a smart thing to do what I'm doing, which was play a little bit of Stranger of Paradise, play a little bit of Tunic, and then play a little bit of Elden Ring. And the whole thing, it was just getting like, I was like, my hand muscles were getting a little bit confused as to kind of like what buttons to press.
Yes.
So, you know, when I was playing Returnal, everything is like fast and you're dashing, you're running. And it was such a clash when I went back to Elden Ring, because I would think that, you know, like clicking on the L3 bumper would make me run. Yes. But that makes you crouch by default. Yes. And
I keep doing the same thing.
And I kept doing the same thing. And then, you know, I am super rusty in Returnal to the point that I can't get the active reloads as good as I was, you know, doing it before when I actually played that game. But, so they added co-op. And then they added another kind of area of the game called like the Tower of Sisyphus. Which is basically, and it's kind of interesting because it's basically kind of like an endless mode, arcade mode, so to speak. You're just trying to get like the highest score possible. but then they're also kind of tying in kind of like story elements to it. So, you know, when you go into the tower, there's another section that you can kind of go to, which is similar to the house, but instead of the house, it's like a hospital. And that just kind of opens up more of the narrative behind the game. And then, you know, literally throughout the floors that you kind of go up on this tower, you also get additional kind of audio logs that kind of, you know, talk about her story, so to speak. So, I mean, it's really fun. It's really smooth. And you know, I've been constantly going back to it. And then, yeah, we tried co-op. So I tried co-op with you, and then I tried co-op with Dash.
What did you guys do when you played co-op? Did you do tower?
No, you can't co-op tower yet.
Okay.
So for whatever reason, they've decided that you can't co-op the Tower of Suspense, which I think is unfortunate, because I think that would have been
That'd be so much fun.
But hopefully, you know, when hopefully they consider adding co-op to it later. Like the co-op is very interesting to me, because I feel like they need to kind of balance it a little bit more for co-op, because I feel like first off, it is fun, right? It's fun to play co-op, but I think it seems like and I don't know if it's just because, you know, the randomness of the game is hasn't been kind to our first like two runs, one with Dash and then the one with you. It's just that there's a lot of trade-offs that you kind of have to do. Like, you have to, like, there aren't that many weapon drops. So you have to decide, okay, which one of us is going to get that weapon. And same thing kind of goes for like the items and the health there. Whereas before, you know, because it's not like they increase the amount of resin that's available, at least that's what it seems like, or the little, you know, the
girl, we health. Sure did. There's one extra per round. I'm just kidding.
But even then, right, like the game,
it was a struggle.
And you know what, I don't know if this is kind of like a placebo, but the game feels harder in co-op.
Can I say, obviously we're coming back into it after being out for 2 months. I'm sure that's as true. We Me especially. I mean, you guys beat the game, at least. I never got to beat the game because I don't want to say it like this, but I essentially gave up for the time being until my kids are old enough to understand not shutting off my system.
or playing different games.
Well, now
we have a suspense cycle at the time.
Yeah, and now we got the suspense cycle, so I have no excuse. I just haven't gone back to it. Yeah. But it did feel a lot harder, especially having played all the different games that I've been playing in the meantime. My muscle memory is completely gone for that game. And I'm sure it'll be easier once you get back into it and your muscle memory does reform. Yeah. You know, we're like, I'll disclose that I was getting absolutely murdered while we were co-oping. And and I was using all the health that we found because, you know, I would take so many hits because I was just so rusty. So, you know, I was dragging the team down in this sense.
I was dragging Dash down when we were playing.
That man is a gaming god. I don't understand it.
I think previously, you know, he did do some practice of the game, and I think he got all the way. I forget whether he beat the game again and got the true ending, or if he
did. Yeah, okay. He was like, I still got it.
No, yeah. So when we came down to like the first boss, like all right, I jinxed us, because I was like, you know, after the first two health bars were gone, we're on the last health bar. And I'm like, this isn't as bad as I remembered it. Mm-hmm. And then he goes like, what was his name? Like Frike or something? He goes, he goes insane. And I could not dodge. Nothing. Yeah, I could not dodge his melee. And he like literally killed me in like one or two shots. And we couldn't.
And then there's no revival on the battlefield like that.
Yeah. You can revive people, right? But the amount of time that it takes, and when you're in the boss room, pretty much just means like if someone goes down, unless
down.
By some sheer luck, like, you know, and all right, well, actually, I guess for the most part, the bosses, you know, they don't you're not really given a lot of space to kind of like hide in, right? Like you're always kind of like exposed. So
And you just have to be constantly moving. So standing
It's just not ideal, especially Frike, who has a phase where he just kind of like he just teleports
destroys
to you.
Destroys you.
Exactly. And you know, I feel like they need to balance that a little bit. Because I think, you know, the power-ups that you get needs to be a little bit more, but then I also kind of think, you know, I kind of shared the opinion of some of the, you know, kind of impressions that I've read where, people kind of like think that the co-op mode is just pretty much to help, you know, anyone else who hasn't probably like beaten the game to actually like beat the game. Which I can kind of agree with because it's, you know, it takes a couple hours to go through the whole game.
Yeah. Which is so incredible to me because I spent way more than that just going through the first like two places.
Yeah. And, and it's like, well, you know, that's kind of like the roguelike like aspect of it, right? Yeah. The randomness. It's like, if you get that awesome build, and you're by yourself, like it'll only take you like a, I forget what the, you know, what the speed run is.
That's so
speed running,
yeah,
is. But you kind of have to expect your co-op partner to kind of put in like the same amount of like hours. So it kind of, and that's why I'm kind of saying, like, you know, it's a shame that, you know, like the Tower of Sisyphus isn't like they don't have like co-op in there.
Hold on,
that is a perfect mode for it.
I looked up the record for speed running. And glitchless new game plus record right now is 3 minutes and 55 seconds.
No way. That is like that's a super glitch playthrough. Like,
it says glitchless. And then there's like 4 minutes going up to like 7 on the leaderboard right now, up to placeholder 16. So that's wild, curious. Dude.
Well, then again, when you beat the game, you do kind of in general know kind of like the layouts of each of the biomes.
When but even I not think you also game, well, you know, dying so many times, you learn what each room looks like, you know, what to expect even though they're shifting.
But I was kind of like thinking from the standpoint of you kind of know where like the portals are to the other biomes. So I wonder if maybe they're just kind of like hopping biomes, or if there is a glitch that just kind of takes you to the final thing. Because I'll tell you what, Biome 6 is no joke.
No, oh, God. I thought that every other biome was no joke. I'm just kidding.
Look, Biome 6, the biome itself is harder than the final boss.
Oh, my gosh. That's funny.
Oh, okay. Wait.
Is that the one
maybe
that
it's not
in?
Biome 6. Maybe it's Biome 5. I forget that, which one it is.
Is that the Citadel? With all the robots?
The last? No. Okay. So
there's a harder one than the robots?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm never gonna beat this game.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
The last biome has these trap rooms.
Gosh, no.
Which is really crazy. Yeah. But once you
get in there and everybody's just breaking it down to this dope trap music, it sounds like hell.
Yeah. Once you clear that, it's like it gives you the training you need to take down the final boss of that game, which I think, it might have been Biome 5 because I think there's only, I'm getting my biomes like mixed up because it's been a while. But it's like an underwater like biome.
Yeah.
And that's all I'll say about that. But
what kind of music are they playing in the trap rooms? Is it like Gucci Mane, Young Thug?
What do I
have to look forward to?
Man, I would imagine something frenetic if you know, that actually did kind of like exist. But yeah, you know, that's kind of like Returnal in a nutshell. And then I tried a little bit more of the Stranger of Paradise demo just because I'm thinking, you know, maybe potentially that might be one of the main games I play after like Elden Ring and Returnal. I did unlock the weapon for like a battle axe, which unlocks basically the warrior marauder class. That class feels great.
It does. That's I use a future version of that class.
Yeah.
It's like an alternate of magic and marauder. It's pretty great.
Yeah, and I saw like a screenshot of like your character, and I was like, that actually, that armor looks actually like cool. So like, who designed that one, and how did these other ones get like passed? Well,
I'm literally wearing a pink hat now.
Yeah, you went from like, yeah, you had this like
dragon armor.
Yeah, dragon armor, and that looks like that looks legitimately cool.
Yeah.
And
because you can optimize your character if you just like go to your battle, and you can set it in the settings too, but you can like optimize all the characters with the best armor you have for like affinity and attack and all that crap. But like usually it's like when you start Destiny and you've just got a bunch of hodgepodge armor on, and you just look like a mess. Yeah. So that's my whole character. Just like, I've got like dragon gauntlets with like a pink hat on and a weird blue cape. Like, I look terrible, but it's like the best affinity boosting armor for me at that time.
Yeah. My Jack right now has this weird headpiece that's basically looks like kind of like a dragon top, but then it has like a little like cloth, like mask, like over his like mouth. Yeah. Man, does not look like I couldn't take it seriously when it came to the cutscene. It's just kind of like laughing.
I turned like off masks ridiculous on looks. The cutscene because
I might actually do that because it was kind of distracting here. Yeah, and he was trying to be all kind of like serious in the cutscenes here, and I just couldn't take it seriously because
you have a pink hat on, Jack.
Yeah, his headpiece looks it looks ridiculous.
Yeah, That's exciting. Now, are you enjoying Stranger Paradise?
I am. I think the combat is really kind of like what makes you play that game, makes you progress further in that game. But at the same time, the cheese, right? Like it's like it's like watching a Fast and the Furious like movie, right? Like you're not there for Oscar bait or a deep narrative or story, right?
Yeah.
You're there for the stupid things that happen in the movie.
Yeah. Well, but that being said, if you know the story, like I am there for the story. Like I want to see this transition, no spoilers, to the end of the story.
Yeah.
You know, like I want to see everything play out and I'm excited about that. But also like I am finding myself getting a little bit bored.
I can see that because the level design, outside of being like a homage to like various like Final Fantasy games, is very like PS3 360like designed, right? Like you just go from room to room, killing enemies. But then you know it also has like how back then in that generation it was pretty big to like always have like these little. Like set pieces of like things like falling down and stuff like that, like Uncharted esque, and it does that too. It does it a lot.
Yeah,
which is kind of funny because there's a character in there. I took a screenshot of it and I meant to tweet it out, but I was like, "What's Sean Bean doing in this game?" For your reference, he's like who I'm calling Sean Bean is the pirate that you face earlier on.
Yes.
But yeah,
and so like I'm all not... his movies, he dies.
Yeah, and it's like does he really though? Since it's not really Sean Bean, but it'd be funny if it was Sean Bean at the end of the credits. So I mean that's only really like I don't know what really like two or three levels into the game. Which, yeah, I haven't gotten to that point where, like, I'm tired of it, but I could definitely see it. Because really, if you get bored of the combat, then that's probably bad for the game.
Yeah, at the moment, I'm kind of in that boat where, like, I'm enjoying it. Don't get me wrong, but right now it's kind of my backup game. It's kind of like my I need a breather from this game.
Yeah. Game. Which is kind of funny because we're speaking of that like backup game, and then my backup game is Tunic,
it's so cute,
and it's like playing a cute like Zelda like game,
yes,
with a like lo-fi like track in the background.
It's fantastic.
Yeah,
it's so fun.
It is fun. It is it. at some point, and I keep saying this in our chat, like I want to play an easier game, but I'm not doing it. Like I'm making a conscious effort to like play these kind of like difficult games. And part of me is tempted to like enable the never fail mode.
Yes. For Tunic. My kid is using that right now.
Yeah.
And it looks tempting.
And I am like tempted to do that because, you know, while the game itself isn't, it's not hard like Elden Ring or Soulsborne game. It's definitely not as hard as like Stranger Paradise.
Yeah.
At least, you know, in the brief like 2 hours that I've played with it, and I don't think I've faced like a boss yet. But in terms of like the enemies so far, I think there's only one that's given me like an issue, but I'm not sure if it's because I don't have like all the necessary like equipment to get them. And you know, it's not really a spoiler, but there's an enemy there that has like a big tower shield, is bigger than anyone else on the map, and is basically like a shield and like a spear.
Yeah,
enemy.
I think I watched something like this.
Yeah, and
with the no fail mode on.
Yeah, and I feel like early on you're probably not supposed to take him on.
Yeah,
because he can literally take your health like down to like one HP in one hit when you get hit by him. But it, you know, that game is fun. It seems like kind of like the old school like Zelda games, and I'm like, it's kind of funny because I'm saying like old, like I've played all the Zelda games. I've watched many Zelda games.
Yeah.
It's just so
cute and happy. And it really does bring up that the gameplay itself really does bring back that nostalgic feel of like playing, you know, Seasons and Ages and you know, things like that.
That and, you know, like secret passages and treasure like throughout the map, for places that you wouldn't even think would be there.
Yeah.
And by some strange luck, you decided just to kind of check out that little nook and cranny. And that led you to like another secret room or shortcut. Yeah. So I find that great. And then the other thing that, you know, love it or hate it, is probably the game has its own language.
Yes. My wife is very confused by that.
Yeah. And I'm not sure how I feel about it yet.
Have you played Kirby, by the way, Forgotten Lands?
It's got its own language.
Is it
like that too?
It's got subtitles under the subtitle in its own language.
Yeah, so this one doesn't have the subtitles. And I think you're supposed to get, I don't know, some of it is translated, some of it is not. And I wonder if there's like some kind of cipher as you move forward with the game, or if it's continuously like that. Although it does like have
Animal Crossing,
like,
but without the clear English text.
Yeah, yeah. So like you pick up an item and just like these hieroglyphics of their language like kind of come out. Or the letters like, and they come out. And it's like, what does that do?
Yeah.
I don't know if maybe you're supposed to equip it and just figure out what it does. I haven't done that yet. I've just like picked it up and then gone to like next area. But yeah, I mean, that game's fun. I just kind of completed the first tower of it all. And it's been great. So
That is really fun. I've been playing, actually, I've been relatively conservative. I've only been playing.
No way.
I know, believe it or not. Well, okay, conservative is a relative term here because I am still playing four games consecutively, but I haven't played them a ton this week. So, like, I've been playing Ghostwire, Stranger Paradise, Kirby Forgotten Lands, and Tunic as well. But mostly I've been playing Stranger Paradise and Ghostwire. And I gotta say, man, I love Stranger Paradise. I've been having a great time playing it. But my only gripe so far is, you know, like I would love like a transmog system because, again, I optimize my armor like every single time I get in a fight pretty much because I pick up, you can set in your settings what you pick up. And so like I set in my settings only to pick up stuff with a rating greater than like 2 stars because I'm like, I'm tired of getting all this garbage. and I was filling up my so you can only carry something like 500 items at a time. And I was filling that like, and you can transfer them when you hit the little save cubes, you can transfer all that to your external inventory or like break it down or whatever. But I just got it out of my inventory and transferred it out. But anyway, I was filling that thing up left and right. And I was like, man, this is just way too much, you know, loot. So I set my settings. So I'm only picking up, you know, good stuff. But yeah, all my characters look stupid because they're wearing all this hodgepodge armor. So even though they're super powerful and they're doing these really dope attacks, it's just, they don't look cool. And I know that's a really dumb thing to really gripe on. I want them to look super cool. So I've been wearing like low level armor. So
yeah,
dragon armor on.
Yeah, well, because like part of it is like, you know, when you first start out in a MMO game, mm-hmm. right? Like when you first start out at level one, and then, you know, through the early levels of that game, you typically look like a scrub, like, yes. right? Like you don't have yes. like all the cool armor, but once you reach max level and you've done the raids and all that, right? Then yes. you have like those armor sets and they're all shiny yeah. and they look cool. That. You want that for your like your non-level one character.
Yes, yes. Well, now I think my character's like level, I don't know. Actually, I don't even know what my level is because I've only been focusing on the job levels, which I've gotten multiple of those to like level 30. But yeah, I'm having a really good time. I mean, again, I am there for the story. The gameplay is great. One thing I actually am embarrassed to say, but I kind of skipped through a lot of the dialogue because I was holding my baby or talking with my wife or whatever while I was playing it. And so I didn't realize that you can like assign specific actions that require specific jobs. So like you can have shortcuts when you're fighting, or you can have combos specific to the set that you have equipped, or not a set, sorry, but the job that you have equipped. And so like, you know, I didn't realize that I could set these different combos. And so I was like, man, the fighting is like super repetitive until I realized that you could do like, you know, R1, R2, and then it's like a super move or whatever. But now I'm having a great time with it. Now that I've kind of gone back and relearned some of the mechanics and actually read through this. So that's my fault that I wasn't having a great time in the battle. But overall, I'm loving it. I can't wait to see the transition, you know, and hang out with my homie. I saw the fist bump with, what's his name? I can't remember his name. The guy with the jewels and the hair.
I don't think I've been.
Oh, okay.
I'm never not that far with that
game. I won't spoil anything. He's dope. But anyway, yeah, aside from that, I'm playing Ghostwire, and that game has been nothing short of amazing. I am 100% hooked. And I mean, as with my platinum in Assassin's Creed, Valhalla and Odyssey, I have a weird obsession with going around collecting stuff. So yeah. Ghostwire is not great in that sense because I have hardly played the story. All I've been doing is going around collecting spirits. And the only thing I spend my money on is that you can buy these I forgot what they're called all of a sudden, but they're like little pieces of paper that you collect the spirits in. And so I want as many of those as I can get so that I can collect more spirits as I go around town without having to stop. So right now I've got like 30 something and that's all I spend my money on. They're like $3,000 each. So anyway, that's I don't even buy food. Like I just buy those little things and that's it. So I can collect spirits.
What I didn't know about that game was that it was a open world game.
Yeah.
So how is it kind of like, I'd imagine right now you're probably in the open world since you mentioned that you're kind of going around and just doing the collectibles. Yeah.
So as you progress, and it's not even necessarily part of the main story as you, I mean, obviously you have to do this to get to other further main story missions, but as you progress, you find these Tori gates. And usually there's a shrine associated somewhere, but you have to purify these Tori gates. And then every time you do that, it clears the mist for like a specific radius. And so that's what I've been doing too. I've been collecting spirits and going and finding these Tori gates, you know, praying at statues to get a little bit more bling.
So the Tori gates are kind of like the tall neck or the radio towers of the game.
Yes.
So I'm kind of curious. So it seems like instead of kind of leaning towards more of the kind of like the Elden Ring, Red Dead Redemption, and Breath of the Wild, kind of like end of the camp of the open world genre, where things are kind of a little bit more like you kind of have like to discover kind of things. Does this lean more towards kind of like the Ubisoft like open world slash like Horizon?
It's a little bit of both because you are relatively funneled in a specific direction because of the fog gate or because of the fog around you. So the Torii gates aren't necessarily on the map right away. They're as you get closer to them, they appear like as blue circles or whatever. So like that's a search radius for you. But you're kind of funneled to specific areas because you can't go to these other areas until you find the Torii gate for it. Or until it opens up in the story. So, you know, for a minute there, I was stuck in this tiny little section. Yeah. And then I didn't even realize the Torii gates were clearing the mist areas because I was just kind of having fun and going around. But like the Torii gates really are more or less like the bandit camps. You have like, you have to clear, there's not many, but like you have to clear enemies from in front of the gate before you can actually purify it. But like in my experience, it's only been like a max of like 10 enemies that I fought at any Torii gate.
So how does that so in terms of like the open world, are you kind of left to kind of like discover kind of like the side objectives, the side quests in the game, or is it more kind of like pointed out to you? So it's pointed
the side missions are pointed out to you as you discover the Torii gates. The second the mist clears, it shows a bunch of little green circles that pop up, and you know what those are. And it'll give a description too on your map. You can go hover over them. It'll tell you what the reward's going to be and what you're going to be doing. Yeah. So I have been utilizing those a lot because you need the materials from them to upgrade your skills.
Yeah.
So being laser focused as I am, I'm just teasing by the way, cause I'm not laser focused, but in video games, I am methodical. I have one specific skill that I want to obtain right now. There's one specific skill that I want to obtain right now. And it requires me to do a lot of side missions. Well, not a lot, but like seven, side missions. I don't know why I put air quotes around seven, but it requires me to do seven side missions that give you a specific resource. It's not a spoiler because it comes up super early. Eventually you can leave the streets and you can go up to the rooftops. Like grapple they up kind to of the rooftops. Eventually there's a skill that you can unlock, but it requires quite a bit of resource where you can manifest your own Tengu and grapple anywhere you want. So I'm like, I'm literally not spending any of my points. I want that skill and that's it. And then I'll focus on everything else. Because I'm so layers of focused on trying to get these spirits. So a lot of them are out of reach. A lot of them need that skill to get to.
Yeah. I can't wait to get into that game. It just has to
so good.
Wait a little bit.
Yeah.
I need to make more progress in Elden Ring.
Yes.
A little bit more in Tunic. And then kind of decide whether I want to tackle Ghostwire or Stranger.
Yeah. So, and I think honestly, I hate to say it, Jazz would be incredibly disappointed in me, but I think I'm putting Stranger of Paradise on the back burner so that I can play Ghostwire because I think that this is my next platinum game. Because I am obsessed with it already and it's all I want to play. But on that note, let's do a little bit of house cleaning. Housekeeping. I'm not as adept at this as Dash. Hey, if this is your guys' first time listening or you've listened before and you enjoy what we do here, go ahead and give us a like and a subscribe on this video. We'd really appreciate it. It really helps us keep going and doing what we're doing. So moving on to the news portion of this. I don't know if you guys heard from the angry console warriors on the internet, but Sony has acquired Haven Studios. Wow.
Yeah.
That's incredible, right? Like, you know, a lot of people's issue with that right now is that Haven has not announced or shown any games to date. So a lot of people's argument there is, why would they buy the studio? They haven't done anything. You know, Jeremy, you got some thoughts on that?
Yeah, so I think the primary, like, that is one of the concerns, right? And then one of the concerns is kind of like this, if you kind of compare like Sony's like previous acquisition of Bungie and kind of all the news around that, right? Like we know that Sony is developing at least 10 live service like games
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, to a lot of gamers out there, especially ones that are fans of like Sony games, they're a little concerned like of this kind of like games as a service kind of like focus.
Yeah.
Especially since, you know, most of their like, you hear kind of like reports of their core teams, like, you know, working on like multiplayer experiences. And that kind of goes for like, you know, Naughty Dog, obviously, right? They're working on Factions. Guerrilla Games, rumored to, you know, be working on a shooter. Mm-hmm. And that kind of just kind of, that trend that you can kind of see. And Gran Turismo 7 is kind of like a example of that, right? I think a lot of people were kind of expecting a single player focused game in that.
And I'll be honest, I was.
Which, you know, honestly, it does have that, right? But it's also, you know, I think many didn't realize that it is kind of a live service game.
Yeah.
And so there has been kind of like some disappointment in that and some, you know, rightfully so, some backlash. Because, you know, in terms of like Sony trying to, I don't know if, you know, it's probably a mix of Sony and Polyphony Digital seeing what they can kind of get away with in terms of like, you know, how they do microtransactions. And in due part, you know, kind of like you hope that since Bungie has a lot of experience in that sector, you know, with Destiny,
invaluable,
that'll be able to kind of share their learnings of how to actually strike that right balance of microtransactions. I know gamers would probably prefer that there wouldn't be any.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, we know that, you know, Haven is working on a multiplayer live service game.
Yep.
I don't think we have any information outside of that of what it is. So they're about 60 employees, and it's a bit of an anomaly because outside of Sony helping kind of like fund the studio from the onset, they haven't released anything, right? And Jade Raymond, she's been very kind of like successful in kind of building studios from the ground up. So she knows she has the experience of building studios. It's just that, you know, she tends to kind of like leave shortly after, you know, the said studio has been kind of like built. So hopefully, you know, she kind of like sticks around with Sony from kind of like all the interviews, you kind of you get an inkling of that. Of it being kind of like a their haven, right? So I think, you know, two points, I guess like a couple of points. You know, obviously Sony is trying to look for that live service game that they can kind of, you know, have a good base to kind of help, like, kind of, what am I trying to say here? They're trying to find a successful, for lack of a better term, they want their own Fortnite. You know, they might have that with Bungie, but I think, you know, they're going to want to try to have like similar experiences like that. They want their own Fortnite. They want their own Genshin Impact. Because obviously, I mean, if we look at like the report, sort of like the revenue of Tencent, like, I think it's like $32 billion or something like that.
I mean, a lot of money.
And they mostly have like live service games. So it's no surprise that, you know, Sony would kind of want a piece of that pie, and they've been trying to, and they've just been horrible at it.
Unfortunately, it is an unfortunate truth. But clearly, I'm so sorry, I'm cutting you off there.
No, I was just gonna say, you know, but clearly, you know, they've seen something, you know, they know what this game is. They clearly like the talent behind it, and so, you know, for them, it made sense to kind of like acquire them. To lock down that talent under their studio.
Let me read this quote that furthers that. Because clearly, like you said, they saw something that we don't know about that they just said, man, we got to lock this down because this is the next best thing.
Potential.
And we want this.
Right.
And so, for instance, Herman Holst via Game Industry Biz said, it's just easier for us to invest in the team and game more deeply this way. It's a testament to the fact that we've been very impressed with the progress that Haven has made. They're actually exceeding a lot of the plans, including in terms of time, which very rarely happens in game development. So we thought, let's invest deeply and do this properly. But then he goes on later to say that the acquisition will also give PlayStation something it's never had, which is a developer in Canada. And that Sony, he wanted to reaffirm that Sony's going to continue to make single player experiences alongside their live service offerings, because I know a lot of people were concerned about that. You know, if they're going to focus on live service, is a single player experience going to go away? And they clearly said, no, it is not. So that's encouraging. That's very encouraging, because, you know, that's everyone's worry. I mean, it was my worry.
Yeah. Like, would we still get kind of your Last of Us, your Uncharted, your Horizons, or even, you know, the smaller projects like Astrobot and some of the smaller things that kind of get lost.
These little gems in there.
From like Media Molecule, Pixel Opus. Like, you know, what's going on with those? Like, last thing you want is kind of like Activision Blizzard, where all your studios are now working on live service games and Call of Duty. Like, that is work right there.
Yes.
And luckily enough, you know, they kind of like dispelled that. So, we don't have too much information outside of it being kind of like a multiplayer experience. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think in terms of kind of like the pedigree behind it. Can't wait to see what it finally is, and how it kind of compares. Yeah, some people are kind of thinking that maybe it's kind of like a like an Animal Crossing experience, and then there have been like some like rumors, grain of salt there, kind of like a PlayStation Home like type thing. So it'll be interesting to see what that is, you know, what their game is, and how different it is compared to the other games as a service that they have in the pipeline. So let's just hope that it's not like if they do microtransactions, it isn't as bad as Gran Turismo 7 or in your face as Gran Turismo 7.
So let me read this last quote, and then we can get down to asking some of the basic questions that I'm sure you and I and others are concerned about. So a quote from Jade Raymond via Game Industry Biz: "The Haven team continues to feel like this is the best experience that we've had in our careers," which is very positive, by the way. It goes on to say, "It's been amazingly collaborative with so many talented people to work with and inspiring studios to exchange ideas. The team felt like we could really make the best quality game if we were part of the PlayStation family." So again, that just speaks volumes to the mutual feeling of collaboration between Jade Raymond Studio, Haven, and Sony. That's very exciting, because obviously, you know, obviously Sony's not buying a studio that that they're like, "Oh, maybe we can work with these guys." You know, they're buying this in full confidence, knowing that they are going to they're going to produce something great.
Yeah, and we know that Sony studios kind of have like this, they kind of collaborate with each other, right? Mm-hmm. You know, on the surface they kind of collaborate, but you know, deep down they're competing with each other.
Yes, absolutely.
But that doesn't kind of like stop them from kind of sharing, you know, kind of the technology and you know, how they implement things. And you know, for Haven to have like, you know, Naughty Dog, Guerrilla Games,
oh my goodness,
Insomniac
as a resource,
Bungie, right? Bungie, you're making a live service game. Like, you have some good support there.
Yeah. So, burning questions. Ultimately, which I think we kind of already answered this, but let's ask it anyway. Are we worried with Sony seemingly focusing on live service games?
Personally, I'm not, because we know that they're making single player games as well. And yes. I think, you know, this might make me sound a little bit of a Sony fanboy, but all right. So Sony has usually done a good job of having a diverse lineup in terms of smaller games, kind of like Concrete Jungle. It was
Concrete Genie. Jungle? Yeah, Concrete Genie.
God, Tokyo my Jungle is what I was thinking, but that was a long time ago.
I know what it is.
Yeah.
Side note, my kid used to call it Concrete Gene, and he would say it didn't sound good whenever he would say it. So anyway, continue.
And then, you know, they've been funding Dreams for a while.
Yeah.
From
Which
Media
is very
Molecule.
Surprising, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Because Dreams, it's fun, but
yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, they do have like a diverse like lineup of games, and you know, they're just adding like say what you want about kind of like the, you know, kind of the world that we live in right now.
Yeah.
But like everyone's looking to get into metaverse. Yeah. Everyone's looking to get, you know, their kind of like Fortnite or, you know, such like success like that. You know, we've seen Microsoft try it. If you look at kind of like their big IPs that have come out in the past year, Forza, Horizon, and Halo, Halo especially, right? Like that's a live service game. So that's kind of, you know, sadly, that is kind of like the trend that the industry is kind of moving towards too.
And I think Halo really showed that you can't just release a live service game. There needs to be updates. There needs to be content. There needs to be fair marketplace. There needs to be a lot more content that they were pumping out. You know, it was almost like they were relying on the Halo name to keep it going.
I think developers, publishers are going to learn some harsh lessons because that, you know, as they try to kind of like explore this, because you know, gamers know what they want, and they don't want like to be kind of taken advantage in that way.
I don't want a $15 color for my armor. I'm just gonna say it.
Yeah, it's like X-Men with the first class, where you know, like James McAvoy was like, "I don't want this future." It's like it's basically that.
The worst James McAvoy ever.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm like contradicting myself by saying, you know, like I am not too worried, but then here I am. I am kind of slightly worried.
Yeah, well, and that's natural. You can be a little worried.
Yeah,
you know, but, you know, which actually knows that brings us butter,
right? That's is single player games.
So. Yeah, that does bring us to our next question, which is, what do we think about this acquisition?
Yeah,
you know. Oh, I'm sorry, I forgot to tell you. I'm full agreement. You know, I think that. Them coming out, Herman Hulse coming out and saying blatantly, we are not going to stop development of single player games.
They knew.
Really eased me.
Yeah. They knew that was a question that was going to be asked. It's like, okay, we just said that we had like 10 live service, you know, games in development. And then also we fumbled on Gran Turismo 7 because, you know, there's a backlash there, which is right. I mean, it kind of deserved that backlash.
So, you know, ultimately, what do we think about this acquisition? You know, I think I'll go first in just saying that I'm excited about it because, again, to kind of go backwards a little bit, whatever they saw inspired them so much that they didn't go through their normal process of the, you know, as people put it on the internet, the dating and then ultimately getting married. They saw something so inspiring that they said, no, let's scoop this up right away before anybody else does. So I'm confident in this acquisition.
Yeah, I think, you know, it makes sense in that Sony needs more experience in that kind of area of the industry, right? That's that's why they acquired Bungie for that reason. And, you know, I just kind of hope that because obviously they're 60 employees now. You can only imagine that probably ramps up. That at some point, given the pedigree behind her studio, a bunch of ex-Ubisoft, you know, developers that have worked on like some of their popular like IPs, that hopefully, you know, they too kind of get a chance to kind of make a single player focused IP outside of you know, obviously the multiplayer game that they're working on.
And so, you know, do we think that their departure from Do we think that their pivot at place at Sony? Let me start that over. Sorry, I totally butchered that. you know, what do we think about Sony's pivot in investing in talent rather than IPs? Because obviously, talent is going to drive new IPs or further existing ones. You know, how do we feel about that?
Yeah, and I was going to say, talent. I mean, what use is the IP if you don't have the talent behind it to build it? Right. I think, you know, right now you're kind of seeing in the industry like a talent like issue and also like talent retention. How do we keep talent from like going elsewhere? It's kind of why Sony, like as part of that, you know, 3. Whatever billion that they acquired spent to acquire Bungie, they had in there to have some of that allocated towards talent retention so that after the acquisition, like their developers or senior staff members don't go anywhere.
Yeah. Well, and so can you imagine getting a God of War title from, knock on wood, but from a talentless studio, like it just a soulless God of War game? Like that would be awful. No, nobody wants that, you know, or the next Uncharted from just some random studio that doesn't care. It's just a job. Like that would be unfortunate. That would be the beginning of the end for Sony and PlayStation. And that'd be awful.
Yeah. I mean, I have no issue with them kind of pursuing like talent because honestly, at the end of the day, talent's going to, what's going to drive kind of like game innovation. And that's, you know, that's what, cause we're kind of like seeing it, right? Like, it's hard to make a studio. It's from the ground up.
Oh yeah.
And some of them, you know, sadly don't make it past kind of like their prototyping phase. Or you'll hear a story out there that their game is stuck in kind of like development hell.
Yes.
So obviously, so it's, you know, besides like if we're talking about them kind of pursuing IPs, that's way, way expensive than just getting talent. So,
yes. Yeah. So I guess ultimately the burning question is, was this a risky move? You know, again, we don't know what's happening behind closed doors. We don't know what they saw. We don't know what their path is. We don't know if they have future games planned. We don't even know what their current game is, you know? So could this be considered a risky move? Partnering and acquiring a studio that hasn't produced anything really out in public eye.
I mean, they had to, look, they have like smarter people than us there these like decisions, right?
Yes.
From a point of view of like not knowing all the background stuff that's going there, of course this seems like a risky move to us. Like we don't know,
we just said that about the Bungie acquisition.
Like we don't know anything outside that it's a multiplayer game that kind of worries us because it's a it's based on a live service, right? Like that's the intent of it. But then also, you know, even though they have like this pedigree of, you know, being like ex Ubisoft developers and Google developers, you just haven't seen enough of their resume from, cause it is a startup, right? Like they don't have anything. So to us, that's a risky move, but to them, you know, they have people doing risk assessment. And at this point, like I, you know, they obviously felt it was worth taking that risk, and they have a product that they believe in. And not to mention, you have senior staff members from Ubisoft. You have Jade Raymond, who's been kind of like, you know, a part of like that Assassin's Creed Splinter Cell, like IP, right? So, I mean, to us, risky move. I don't think they even disclosed how much they purchased or acquired like Haven for.
No, I don't think that information came out, which I guess ultimately, you know, who cares?
I think
it's just a number for us to talk
about. I think the one thing that we can agree on, that the 200 or so million that Sony spent on Insomniac is like an insane deal when you kind of consider like everything else that has
billions
come after
nowadays.
Yeah.
So crazy.
Yeah.
So I guess that brings us around to our final question, which is, you know, how important is the fact that this is Sony's first Canadian studio? Is that a hugely important aspect?
Just opens the gateway for them.
It absolutely does.
You know, Canada has like, is home to like some good studios.
Yeah.
Like Eidos, obviously Ubisoft. So they do have like good talent there.
Oh yeah.
And in terms of like, in this consolidation race, right. That the industry is kind of like experiencing, it'll be important for Sony to kind of broaden, so to speak, their market or their demographic in terms of like developers. Right. So right now they're mainly in Europe. They're mainly in the US. They have some presence in Japan, which arguably let's also establish a studio in Japan, please.
Yeah.
Give us that monolith, like that RPG studio.
Yes.
That would be great. But that's besides the point. I mean, it just opens the gateway for them to have access to that talent pool in Canada.
It does. That's so exciting. Yeah, there's a lot of exciting things on the horizon here. Yeah. You know, in terms of the acquisition, in terms of just the fact that they now have that presence in Canada. And I believe that, was it Herman Holst that even commented? He's like, you know, I'm surprised we haven't been there, you know, for this long, because there's so many amazing studios out there.
It is actually surprising.
I didn't know that.
I thought they did already, but yeah, you're right.
I didn't realize that.
They don't have one.
So that's it for that conversation. But in other news, oh my goodness, the internet went wild. A new Witcher saga is being built from the ground up using Unreal Engine. That's insane.
Because
they have used, they've used their Red Engine, right? Is that Red Engine for so long now? Right. But this partnership with Epic Games, a 15-year partnership. How crazy is that?
That's a lot of years.
It's a lot of years. I had a midlife crisis just thinking about it.
Yeah, because I will be 50 when this ends.
Yes, that's what I was thinking. I'm like, oh, good night. My kids will be in college anyway. But
and then we'll be here like NXS like episode. I don't know what episode. We'll just say like 800.
We'll be like
today news. CD Projekt Red has decided to re-up their 15-year agreement with Epic. And it would be like, hey, Dash, Gavin, do you remember 15 years ago when we discussed this? In other news,
I sneezed and blew out my back.
It's also true. All things true.
But that's crazy because their 15-year partnership is not only... I don't know where I was going with that, but they are going to help gear Unreal Engine and fine tune it for open world experiences, which is so wild to think about, that they get a say in how Unreal Engine is going to be made and perform in the future. That's incredible.
That's good for them to kind of get like a developer who's working on an open world game. Because I think one of the things that we got tired of for these Unreal like Engine 4 games in the past gen and, you know, to a certain extent, the current gen, are those little tricks that they had to do to make sure that everything was loading in the background with the little like nook and cranny, like little, you know, like sketching by it and stuff like that.
Less of that. Let me read a little more information because I kind of butchered it. So let me read this direct quote from VGC about this partnership. So it says, this is an exciting moment as we are moving from Red Engine to Unreal Engine 5, beginning a multi-year strategic partnership with Epic Games. It covers not only licensing, but technical development of Unreal Engine 5, as well as potential future versions of Unreal Engine, where relevant. We're closely collaborating with Epic Games developers with the primary goal being to help tailor the engine for open world experiences over the course of 15 years, man.
Yeah, and I guess at the at some point, you either decide to continue development on your own in-house engine, which has its drawbacks, it has its own pros and cons, or do you just go with something that's a little bit more, like it's going to work?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, just look at Kojima. They threw in the towel essentially and went hunting. Because it's hard. I mean, that's difficult work. So especially, I mean, reinventing the wheel, obviously that makes sense if you're making something absolutely wildly out there that needs this new technology or specific ways of doing stuff.
And it does kind of make me wonder, like, kind of like the way a developer would collaborate with like Epic Games.
Yeah.
Like, I almost get the feeling I almost get the feeling here. It's just kind of like this one's actual like collaboration. Mm-hmm. Whereas like the other ones, it's just like, okay, we're going to have to make our own like basically forks or edits of the engine, like customize it a bit. But then that seemingly doesn't go back to like
Epic. The main build. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty wild.
I think that's interesting. But I could see like the benefit here. If that eliminates, the whole nook and cranny, like shimmy and crawling through like narrow spaces just to load the next part of level, I am all for it.
Yeah.
and for all intents and purposes, I'm not like being a little unfair because some of the first demos of Unreal 5 is in a like a, this open world that they set up, and you can pretty much you can see that they don't have that.
Again, going back to Red Engine and just talking about their experience in building engines, I mean, look at The Witcher 3. That game was beautiful.
Yeah.
I would often find myself just sitting there and appreciating the environment and how wildly lush it is, you know, and just watching the wind blow through the trees and listening to the sounds and just all of it. I mean, they clearly have good experience building their engine.
Yeah.
And they have a lot to offer.
Yeah.
Unreal Engine 5 going forward.
And the downside of that is, I could be wrong, but I was going to say, and look at the downside is look at Cyberpunk. If that's using Red Engine, technically anything else outside of a beefy PC or a PC, it was pretty bad.
It was a miserable experience, yes.
and I guess, you know, that's one of the things that you won't necessarily have to worry about using a kind of like an established like engine like Unreal. Yeah. Is that you know that it is kind of like optimized for kind of like platforms where you don't have to exactly do that for your engine, which may have not been like fine-tuned, you know, to play on other like consoles.
I mean, look at the Matrix demo, you know, the Matrix demo was so cool, but a lot of people pointed out, they're like, guys, this is a self-enclosed little snippet, you know,
of their
fanciest technology, you know? And so they're like, now imagine that on something the size of The Witcher, you know, or whatever, what have you. And that was kind of hard for me to envision because I'm like, okay, I can see all the fun little, you know, where they let you mess with the dev tools or whatever in their own ways. But yeah, I can't imagine everything looking that beautiful and that pristine as far as the eye can see in something the size of the Witcher game.
By the way, how do you feel about these details, like these small details that they've released about the Witcher game, which I'm hoping doesn't take too long to come out, but you'd have to imagine since they're doing this, they're very early in development. Obviously they're working on Cyberpunk and they're also trying to work on the next gen upgrade to Witcher 3. So
now, when you say small details though, are you referring to just the teaser that they put out there?
Yeah, the minor details that they've released about the game and some of the things that people have kind of like inferred with such with the tease.
Yeah, let's take it away on that.
Seemingly, you know, maybe this game is maybe like maybe at least 3 to 4 years out. Hopefully,
yeah.
I mean, at least. Hopefully it's sooner. Hopefully, you know, maybe they're a little bit further along. But
Using Unreal Engine, I mean, it might be closer than we think because the tools are there.
Which one do you think is going to come out first, this one or Elder Scrolls?
Oh, definitely this one. Yeah, The Witcher is definitely coming out before Elder Scrolls.
Yeah. Hopefully less buggy too.
I love that they confirmed that the medallion is a Lynx and that threw everybody for a loop because Lynx school is not a thing in canon.
Doesn't exist.
Yes. Right. Which brings us to the next cool thing, which is it may or may not be based on fan fiction.
Yeah.
Exciting.
Yeah. Obviously you're, you know, between, you know, all three of us, you're probably the Witcher, you know, like lore master. And without spoiling too much, did not know about this previously. And, you know, I'll admit that I've only completed Witcher 2. I've played a little bit of Witcher 1. And played a bit of Witcher 3 as well. Have seen the show and the anime.
Yeah.
But have not read the books. Ooh.
I haven't watched an anime for The Witcher.
It's on Netflix.
Okay.
And I did not know that. I thought The Witcher was just an order, right? Which technically I guess it kind of is. But I did not know that they had different schools.
Yes. It's like Hogwarts.
And Geralt is from the Wolf School.
Yes.
So when people were kind of like, you know, kind of using their detective skills to kind of like very, you know, like look at all the detail in that little teaser image with the medallion, the snow, and all that. And that's where they kind of came up with like the Lynx, which apparently was only alluded to in a fan fiction in a wiki or something like that.
Yes. Where they talked about, I think it's Kira Metz going back and reforming an old school called the Cat School into the Lynx School. And so, yeah, if they're collaborating with that, I mean, okay, let's draw back a little bit. For Cyberpunk, they clearly found it necessary to coordinate with outside sources like developers and things like that. Yeah. Maybe they're doing the same thing with storytelling. Maybe they've got, you know, someone was like, bro, I read this fan fiction and it was so good.
Like that idea.
Let's talk to this guy, you know, because I don't know what the legality of like straight up stealing someone's ideas are on the internet. Yeah. So I'm hoping if it does go this direction, they talk with this person.
So the fan fiction, did it say that it was kind of like a lynx, or was it just like a cat?
So the old school was the Cat School, and they reformed it into the Lynx School.
And that was all kind of defined in the fanfic.
Yes. And so that's what I understand about it. I could be completely wrong. I've never actually read that fanfiction. I just read kind of snippets of it to further understand this whole Lynx confusion that everybody was having. Because also, I'll be honest, I didn't know the Lynx School didn't exist until I read you know, that stuff. So that's pretty exciting. I mean, if they are collaborating with outside sources or not, and they're just going the direction of the Lynx School, and that's the only commonality that these two things have, either way, it's going to be great.
Next gen Witcher. let me just use my imagination. It looks great.
And that makes sense too, right? Like, because even just The Witcher 3 like looks amazing already, and they haven't even released the next gen patch yet. So I have no doubt that it's gonna just look ridiculous.
Do you think like they should go with like a kind of like a set in stone character, kind of like a Geralt, or should you do you think they should go with
a build like, your own?
Like a build your own, like Shepherd or like Dragon Age type like character.
I mean, it's so hard. It's so hard because obviously with Geralt, like we love Geralt. We love his personality. We love that he is subtly hilarious. Yeah. You know, he's a total badass. He's got a history of doing crazy stuff, which you can also apply all those things to your character, like what they did with Shepherd.
What if he's a party member? What if he becomes a party member? Or what if you see him in the world and you team up to fight said monster in the quest?
Yeah, I mean, see, that would be so cool. Because that's where a lot of people were kind of joking around on the internet. They're like, okay, cool. Geralt's, you know, story is over. But what is he going to have some sort of capacity in the next game?
Yeah, just imagine.
No, I'm not even going to go that far. I was going to say something sacrilegious, like maybe he helps form the Lynx School.
Yeah.
And that, you know, is where his role is.
Well, just kind of like imagine, right? Like you're playing the game, your character, you're going through a quest. You're about to get your ass handed to you by said monster, right?
Yes.
And all of a sudden you get saved. And then, you know, the camera.
Kept you waiting, huh?
Yeah, the camera, you see, like, at first, it's, you know, it pans from his boots all the way to the top, and then it's freaking Geralt. And then you're freaking just like, Geralt. I dig it.
I mean, I would be down with this. Yes, I would 100% be down with this. Or if they don't include him at all, you know, obviously everyone's going to be a little sad, but I think that's the expectation is, you know, he's gone. He's done.
Maybe you get hints of him throughout the world. Because I mean, just because it's a, you know, if the rumor or, you know, what we're guessing is true of it being a new school, it just doesn't mean that, you know, there aren't other Witchers. Yeah. Like there aren't other Witchers from other schools like out there, you know, handling business.
Well, and the only thing I could see is that maybe this school is far away, you know, from the Wolf School or from where
that'd be one
events of the first game happened.
Because that would give them give them so much freedom in terms of like where they want to take the story, what locales they want to go to without having to be bogged down with kind of like existing lore. Because
I think we know that, you know, CD Projekt Red and, you know, unless it's been like mended, you know, over the years, but CD Projekt Red and the author of The Witcher haven't been like in good terms, unless that's unless that's that has changed. But yeah, no, I, you know, even as like, you know, even saying like, even not having like beaten Witcher 3, like this still kind of like excites me now. Yes. You know, hopefully they did say, I think I read it from GameSpot. They said that they're going to try to avoid crunch on this title, which is, which is good.
Yeah, it is good.
Because yeah, they have so much toxicity like in the past year when it came with like, you know, Cyberpunk.
Yeah.
Hopefully, yeah, they've addressed those things.
Well, and I'm hoping that their you know, benefactors have also, their investors have also realized that, okay, maybe pushing them to push a broken game out isn't the best choice, and they'll give them the time they need.
Well, I'll tell you what, they don't want to get banned from the PlayStation Store again.
For months.
Yeah,
that was crazy.
Exactly.
Yeah. Gosh, that was a crazy situation, man. That so yeah, crazy. I'm hoping that a lot of people involved with CD Projekt Red have learned their lesson, and the next game will not be rushed, and it will just come out when naturally when it comes out, you know, when it's ready.
Yep.
But to that point, the game is being directed by Jason Slammer, who was the game director on Gwent and a senior UI programmer on Witcher 3. So that gives me a little bit of, you know, confidence there with somebody that was at the helm of Witcher 3 in some capacity as well.
Yeah. And Gwent, so, which has been, from what I heard, like pretty successful, awesome. Right?
Yeah.
Now, I guess the, you know, closing thought on this.
Yeah.
Would you prefer this to be kind of like a, you know, longer like experience as like, you know, something like an Elden Ring or, you know, like a Red Dead where it's like 80, 90 hours or Assassin's Creed? Or personally, I think it would be great if it was like a 20 to 30 hour experience.
Yeah. Well, and that's how their games have been. You know, if you just rush through them and don't do any of the side content, like I beat Witcher 2 and 3 like in about 20 to 30 hours each.
Yeah.
And that was doing none of the side content,
right,
which I understand there's people out there like, you robbed yourself. Because that's true.
Well, let's go back to it.
Yeah. And after I beat it and had more time, I went back and did a lot of the stuff in Witcher 3. And yeah, it was totally true. Like that side content is pretty much its own game and it's awesome. So I definitely recommend not rushing through it and actually playing through the side content. But I would love that option. You know, I would love it if the game did that where, yeah, man, we really encourage you to do the side content because it adds so much to it. But if you just want the story, play through the story 20, 30
years. I guess you're right. Yeah, they've kind of like have done that throughout their games. Like, I think even Cyberpunk is not, if you like main scenario to everything, it's not a long game either.
Because that's exactly right. Like I did the same thing with Cyberpunk. I played through the story, I played a little bit of side content, but I think I beat that game in close to 25 hours or 30 hours, something like that. So it is possible if you're just playing through it at base level. But I want the option, you know, like with Witcher 3 now I'm like over 100 hours, like
little. I'm just like, please don't be Assassin's Creed. Like, I want to get into Assassin's Creed, but knowing that the mainline story with all because of all the fluff, it's like 60, 70 hours.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the platinum, like the platinum took me 167 hours.
It's a lot of time. That is a lot of time.
Yeah. So speaking of Assassin's Creed, there is a rumored Ubisoft digital showcase. And it was reported by Tom Henderson over at, is that Xfire?
Yeah, I think he does some freelance writing. I'm not sure if that's the main outlet that he writes for, but I mainly know him from his tweets where he basically has been kind of a good news source in terms of like EA and know, Battlefield series. So yeah, this one's interesting.
It does. Well, and especially for those of us that are interested in, like, I still love Ubisoft. I mean, don't get me wrong. Like we talk trash on them a lot, but there is still a love there, and I enjoy the Assassin's Creed games, and I am excited for a lot of the games on there, but one of them that they mentioned was like the Prince of Persia 2.5D inspired by Ori. You know, that sounds exciting to me. I would play the heck out of that.
Yeah.
Skull and Bones, obviously, everybody's been anticipating and excited for.
Yeah.
I don't know if you played Immortals Phoenix Rising. I never beat it, but I played it and it was fun. It was like a lighthearted Assassin's Creed.
Yeah. Well, from what I've heard, it's kind of like, and I hate to keep like, we hate to make this comparison, but it's basically a team took their learnings from like Assassin's Creed, right? And then took their learnings from playing like Breath of the Wild and tried to mash them together.
Yes. And I would say they did it very successfully.
Yeah.
You know, because the puzzles were fun. The dialogue was all very lighthearted and silly. There was a lot of, because it takes place in Greece or something like Greece. So, you know, there was a lot of lore when it comes to like the gods and things like that in Olympus. It was just very fun. It was a very lighthearted, fun game. And again, I haven't beaten it, but what I've played of it, I loved it. And I loved how vibrant and silly it was. It was definitely a breath of fresh air in the gaming world from Ubisoft.
I think you kind of seem like this kind of trend where everything is kind of a little bit more serious, especially if you're if you play games on the Sony platform. Especially from the first party, it's a lot of grim stories.
I think I went from The Last of Us 2 into playing this game, and so it was a very
It's kind of like you know how like Elden Ring like came out, right? And that world is somewhat depressing, and then you need that palate cleanser. Of like in this case, it would have been like Kirby, right?
But yes,
in your case, it was Immortals.
So anyway, they're going to announce this rumored to announce or show off things like Skull and Bones, Immortal Phoenix Rising sequel, Avatar, and Assassin's Creed. What are they called? Infinity, Division, like Heartland, Prince of Persia. Yeah. You know, are you excited about any of that? Do you love the idea of getting more Ubisoft content?
Yeah. So, you know, the thing that I'm kind of like most excited about, you know, obviously Prince of Persia, because I loved that series kind of like growing up. And, you know, hopefully when they show the remake, hopefully that looks much better. So I'm excited for Prince of Persia. And then the other game that I would probably be like most excited about is Avatar. Being a big fan of that movie when it came out and the studio behind it, kind of like excited to see, you know, what that gameplay actually looks like, especially when you kind of think of the world of Avatar, Pandora, I think was what it was called.
Yes.
And there's just a lot of potential there in terms of like, you know, the traversal and the world itself. I'm curious to see if they had any like access to, you know, some of the production of like this, well, that and like you know, because James Cameron is making like 2 or 3 or 4 whatever more sequels.
You might not see them
in
if
that
they
world
take 20 years each.
and you know, to see if they kind of include that in the game. I'd imagine they'd probably do it as expansions. But and also another one that we haven't seen in a while is Skull and Bones, which was supposed to be inspired from Black Flag, Assassin's Creed. To see what the final like iteration of that game is, because it's been in development hell for a while.
Yes. Which hopefully is relatively gonna pan out for them, you know, because they're putting extra love into it.
and I'm kind of curious too, like this, you know, rumored digital showcase from Ubisoft, does it happen during E3? Or is it kind of like its own event? Like I kind of forget whether or not E3 has been canceled, but you know, if it hasn't been and this is outside of E3, that's just kind of like goes, you know, to another, like that's like another point to where each of the publishers are kind of having their own showcase, which is what we talked in the previous episode. If you want to get our viewpoints on that.
And I gotta say, I am really excited. I think the one that I read on this list that I was most excited about is Beyond Good and Evil 2. There's like a tiny little bug that just tried to attack me in this room right now. I'm scared for my life because of this moth. I'm just kidding.
Okay, no, you know what?
It just flew right at my face, and I was like,
I'd be the same way too, to be honest with you. Oh man, especially all the things that I've experienced in Elden Ring on how they take like these common things like roach centipedes and hand spiders, like that would give me pause.
Okay. So yeah, but Beyond Good and Evil 2, I'm really excited about that. We haven't seen a whole bunch outside of the first trailer that they showed forever ago.
Yeah, another project that's been kind of like in development hell. Yeah. So actually you're right, like that was one that I was kind of like excited too, so hopefully a little bit more. Yeah,
so all right, moving into our last couple segments here, our reviews have been posted this week, and boy, let me tell you, I'm happy about it. So Ghostwire Tokyo via Metacritic is sitting at a pretty 76. Open Critic is at 77. Tiny Tina's Wonderland apparently is killing it, because on Metacritic it's at 79 and Open Critic it's at 76. We are not even surprised by this because of how amazing it is, but Kirby and the Forgotten Land is sitting at a Metacritic of 84 and Open Critic 85. Hot dang. That's pretty exciting. Hot
dang. And you know what? Actually, you know, when I kind of think of it, this is kind of my fluff, my goof off here. Like,
I did it right. Okay. I thought, you know, because Tiny Tina and Ghostwire kind of have almost like the same, like, score-ish.
Yeah.
But you know what? I did make a minor fib. Open Critic for Tiny Tina's was 79. And the Metacritic for it is, drumroll, 80.
Whoa, okay, wow. So it's doing better than so just to recap on that, Tiny Tina's Wonderland has a Metacritic of 80 and Open Critic of 79.
Yeah
Wow. And so that's a really good score, actually.
Yeah, forgive us, but you know, this agenda was kind of like written like at the beginning of the week to where, you know, not it's all now like moved. The scores were there. But yeah, so, you know, it actually too, I'm just going to make a little bit more, few more corrections here. This is what happens when Dash is out, is like chaos reigns. just to update to you, like Ghostwire Tokyo actually has a Metacritic of 79 and a Open Critic, it went down a little bit, of 76.
Oh dang. Okay, well, hey, this is ever-changing information as the as users get their word in, so not to worry.
Also, out this week too was the first episode of the Halo TV series on Paramount Plus. Did you catch that one?
I did not get to see it, but I did see his face already, which I was like, what?
I am mixed. I am mixed. Like, I understand, you know, I understand that, you know, they tried to separate it off already, right? This is I forget what they call it, like the silver timeline or something, silver squad timeline or something like that.
Okay.
To where they've already completely established that this isn't canon to the games. It's its own universe.
I didn't know that.
It's its own Halo. Like in this universe, it's like completely separate from the Halo games. And yeah, so they're taking some liberties, and one of that being him like revealing what he looks like. And
right away, apparently.
It's not necessarily, you know, right away, but it is in the first episode. And I don't know how I feel about it. I feel like they needed to take the approach of Mandalorian, at least.
Yes.
Like Mandalorian, you didn't know what he looked like until he had to take his helmet off.
Yeah.
And I feel like, should have, like, I don't know.
I don't know, man. Like, I feel bad because, like, I don't want to talk trash on the actor or anything. And I'm not, like, you know, but yeah, I don't feel like, I don't know.
It's also
Halo Master Chief is such a protected figure. Yeah. Like, showing his face, I feel like it's just always been kind of a no-no. They've always teased it,
yeah,
you know, with the back of his head and things like that. And that's where I thought they were going with that when they showed, you know, the back of his head. I figured it was just going to cut to black or something.
I don't know.
Maybe it's being afraid of change.
Yeah, I'm not the biggest fan that they decided to, you know, kind of show its face right away. I think that is something that you can kind of do later on.
Yeah.
Like a Mandalorian, or if they, I also think it's totally fine if they wanted to do the Dredd approach, right? Carl Urban was Dredd. Yes. You never saw his face. He kept his mask on or his helmet on.
Yeah.
But I guess, you know, at some point, maybe the actor needs to breathe. So they have to give him an excuse to like take that on and off, right? Because I think, you know, there are always those like rumored stories out there where Pedro Pascal like was not really a fan of like having the helmet on it. Yeah. I don't know how true that is.
Well,
but I can imagine it.
I wonder if they toyed with the idea of like pulling a Vader. You know, there's a man in the suit, and then there's the voice. Yeah.
That's true.
I wonder if they toyed with that idea and having the original actor do.
I will say that was a bit of a tonal clash too.
Just
playing the games, I expected, you know, like the voice,
Master Chief's voice.
You're used to in the games, and then you know it. It's kind of like you watch the Marvel movies and now you play the games and then you're like, they're not. It's not the same.
It's not Iron Man.
Yeah, that's not Iron Man. That's person trying to impersonate Iron Man.
Yeah, so it's like definitely it was jarring.
Yeah,
it was a little jarring. And I know that's just being a nerd. You know, that's we can't always get everything we want. I don't know. I'm hoping that they roll with it and slowly his actions as the character in the show make him more of the Master Chief that we want.
Yeah.
So that we're used to, I guess I should say.
Yeah.
Or we just end up liking the version of Master Chief that they're making, you know, because as long as he's still a total badass and who he is in the game, I'm happy about it.
It's only one episode in.
Yeah.
We'll give him more time. Anyways. Some quick fire, a quick fire round of of the news stories throughout the whole week, and you know, some of this might have been is a little bit off just because of when we finally nailed down the recording date today. But a Ghostbusters game was announced, and it's a 4v1 game, multiplayer game by Illphonic, which they're no stranger to these type of games. Kind of like how you have Supermassive making all those horror games. It's like Illphonic always making these like 4v1 type games. This one makes sense. This one actually makes sense to have Ghostbusters against a ghost that they must like hunt down. So kind of excited about that one. So that one's called Ghostbusters Spirits Unleashed. Moving on. We figured out that when pre-orders came up, Hogwarts Legacy is going to retail for $70 or 70 euros for the next gen versions. So PS5, Xbox Series X, or S, $70. How do you feel about that?
I mean, honestly, we expect it now, you know, and so I hate to say it. That's so awful. That's like totally defeatist attitude, but it's true, right? Like I now expect, they have geared me to expect next gen games are going to be $70. So when they're not, it's exciting. But when they are, I'm like, there's another one.
I think it's, you know, it's no surprise. I think we'll still have like regular price, like, you know, $59.99 games, $60 games. But yeah, I think you're, sadly, we're probably going to see this trend of that's been going on. And actually, you know, I want to make sure that this was still going on, which it may not be anymore. But at the time of writing, Humble Bundle had a Stand with Ukraine bundle, which, you know, was over 100 games for $40.
It's crazy. I bought it.
Yeah. That included Back for Blood, Metro Exodus. And I guess, you know, a lot of people were happy that Satisfactory was in there, which I heard is a really good game. But they had a lot of other games in there. But like I said, I'm not sure if that bundle is still up, but it was kind of at time of writing. And then also kind of like at time of writing, Gran Turismo 7 had the lowest user score on Metacritic for a Sony game. Rightfully so, because one, they were hit with a server maintenance window that basically made the game unplayable for a whole day. And they nerfed the earnings for the races that you run.
That's horrible, dude.
And that is on top of like pushing microtransactions in your face by topping off your credits. So rightfully so, they got review bombed on Metacritic. So, you know,
that's not good.
Granted, you know, you know, in the beginning they were kind of slow to respond. You know, they did release a statement like a few days ago, where they kind of reversed and kind of changed course. So, you know, they offered apologies and they decided that they were going to kind of like increase the, amounts, that you earn for the circuits. But then also if you, you know, redeem it, I think by April, there you get like 1 million credits or something like that.
Wow.
If you own the game.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and that is still a work in progress. There's still, you know, sadly, they're still trying to figure out the right balance of microtransactions.
Yeah.
I think, you know, the latest thing that what I've heard or have read is, you know, hopefully they make some of the single player aspects of it available offline, because it would suck, you know, like this game has a lot of single player content. It's not as multiplayer focused as GT Sport, for it to be unplayable for a day because, you know, you encountered a bug and you had to put the servers down for a whole day. So hopefully they work around that. And then also this week,
so that Humble Bundle, Stand With Ukraine bundle, it is over. But it was a fantastic deal.
If I didn't have, you know what? I'll say this. If I didn't want to add an additional 100 games to my backlog, that would have been totally appealing.
I did it just for the heck of it. And, I regret nothing.
Hey, well, you know, you were also supporting good cause too.
Yes.
That kind of lifts it up a bit.
Yeah, definitely.
Also this week, looks like we've got some console firmware updates. Nintendo released a new software update which introduced folders, I believe.
Yes,
I have. And that was a game changer
yet.
And then the PS5 also released a system update which sadly does not have folders.
Sadly.
But they made I guess they made some updates to the way that how parties work. So you can now have open and closed parties.
Yes.
And then they also reconfirmed that VRR is on the horizon. And if you're not aware of what that is, I think that's like
variable. We'll have to get Taylor Lyles back in here to talk about it.
Yeah, so basically, I mean, you have a setting. So some TVs support this option. And basically, I think it helps tone down, or it makes, you know, kind of the game seem a little bit smoother. I forget what it exactly stands for. It's like, I think it's called variable refresh rate or something like that.
Yeah.
But yeah. So get to it, because Xbox already has it. So.
Oh, burn.
Yeah.
So it says, simply put, it allows the TV to adjust its refresh rate in real time to the frame rate output by game.
There we go.
So, yeah, that's exciting, man.
Yeah.
So exactly, I guess, what the name means. Wow. Yeah, that was pretty literal, I guess. Refresh rate.
Yeah.
All right. Sorry. Go on.
In other news, so we know that the Mass Effect trilogy director Casey Hudson developed or started a development studio called Humanoid Games. He now mentioned that they are making a AAA multi-platform narrative driven sci-fi game. So,
whoa, the screenshot already that says your journey begins. Oh my gosh, I'm sold.
Yeah. So the only thing I will say is, hopefully, you know, whatever game they're working on right now is hopefully it doesn't end the way that Mass Effect 3 does.
Yeah.
Not the whole like ambiguous ending.
Yeah.
Gamers will have so many interpretations and questions. No.
Oh man, yeah. No, I do not prepare for it ending.
Do not do that. And then in other news, more of a gaming kind of community news, Brandon Jones of Easy Allies and Game Trailers fame has retired from games journalism. So, you know, kind of depending on kind of your exposure to Game Trailers or Easy Allies, he was kind of synonymous with reviews. And if you, you know, watch reviews in Game Trailers or Easy Allies, chances are you were listening to his voice. So, yeah. You know, definitely a big part of my college or high school college years. I'm kind of forgetting when, you know, Game Trailers was up there. But yeah, I used to watch their reviews all the time. And so he's going to focus on VO and family. So hats off to Brandon Jones.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then lastly, Suicide Squad delay to spring 2023. It's a bit of a bummer.
It is. It is.
Considering we've been waiting.
To get the ball it needs. You know,
Yeah, I mean, considering that we've, you know, been waiting for a Rocksteady game for a while. But, you know, nonetheless, excited to play their game once it finally comes out.
Oh, yes. So,
yeah.
All right. So with all that being said, we have had a wonderful time on this cast with you guys. Jeremy, where can we find you?
You can find me and some of my thoughts at NXS Jeremy, but also to do some housekeeping. So I think we're planning to release some Let's Play videos. So, you know, when we tested Ghostwire on Friday night, so we'll look for a Ghostwire video, but then also a first 15 minutes of the Returnal Ascension update, Towers of Sisyphus. And yes, I am, and apologies in advance. I'm shaking off some rust on that game, so you'll see me struggle a lot with the active reload you know system, but you will at least see how it kind of plays off, and then see the first boss, or I say the boss of the tower.
Yeah
With the little
So great. And you can find me at my new handle, which is at Kevin from NXS. And you can find us at NXS Cast. All right. Till next time. See you later.